Dear listener, it's Maria Hinojosa, and welcome to In the Thick.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. It's ITT Sound Off. It's Friday.
Yeah! All right, so we're going to get to our first topic, which came up when we were having our editorial meeting earlier this week.
Yeah.
And you and I were talking about how 45 is having some bad juju. Like, it's not going well for 45 right now. You know, we've had this before where something doesn't go well for him, but this has been like one thing after another, after another, after another. And so we were thinking, you know, it was like, well, some people put a spell on the dude. There's some hexing. There's some
like Santeria shit going on.
Sasan. And then in the conversation, it was like, actually, no, it's people power.
Mm.
It's the power of people. So I just want to give power back to the people in the sense that y'all create juju because, yeah, you do. You know, I don't know what it must feel like to be in a White House surrounded by fence and people protesting. I don't know. It must make you feel a little caged in. Okay. So what we have been seeing also is like extraordinary ongoing and creative protesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is historic.
Right.
You know, focusing on seeking justice for Black lives to, you know, yeah, the flop at Trump's indoor rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They were boasting, of course, you heard this, about a million RSVPs. They were like, a million people have RSVP'd. And then what, only 6,200 of 19,000 seats in the arena were filled?
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know this, Julio. So to be honest with you, this is, I'm showing my age. Because I didn't realize that it really
mom
was...
Mom moment. You're having a mom moment.
Well, I know TikTok. My daughter's on...
You know TikTok. Okay, let's go.
I mean, I've been on TikTok, FYI.
Okay.
And I, of course, obviously Twitter, which I love. But I didn't realize that TikTok slash K-pop, which I do know...
You love K-pop.
Korean pop music. Love this. I didn't realize what they were doing behind the scenes.
Guys, Donald Trump is having a rally next week and it's free. All you have to do is give your phone number and you can get two tickets. So I got two tickets, but I totally forgot that I have to pick every individual piece of land off of my room floor and then sort them by size so I can't make it for Friday. Oh, well, I already got the tickets. And I accidentally just verified it too, so that means there's gonna be at least two empty spots. Guys, that's awful. You should be really careful going to do this, you know, just in case, you know, you can't make it. You know, you don't want a bunch of empty seats.
Oh my God. Dude, I just didn't realize that K-pop fans were so political.
Damn.
So I love that, right? So we all have to open our eyes. And you know that they have this very strong relationship with Latinos, with Mexico. But anyway, so they organized in other ways online, like flooding racist hashtags like hashtag White Lives Matter with photos of K-pop bands and crashing the Dallas Police Department's protest surveillance app with their music videos.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting because everyone talking about this is like, well, don't focus on the TikTok and the K-pop. It's something else. I'm like, I think that played a part. I'm sorry. It played a part. And his campaign can spin it all they want. And Trump can spin it all he wants. Just over 6,000 people.
We saw it.
It looked empty. It looks sad.
Yeah.
But anyway, these are all examples of organizing. But we were also talking about, it's so predictable, Maria.
Yeah.
There's always going to be backlash, right? So with all that happening, which was an embarrassment to the president of the United States and his campaign, in all this historic moment of daily protesting, now you're starting to see racists trying to undermine these movements and they're looking for opportunities. So, for example, like the one that happened this week with NASCAR.
Yeah,
when a noose was found in the garage assigned to Bubba Wallace, who's the only Black full-time driver at NASCAR. This was in Talladega down in the South. The FBI concluded on Tuesday that it was not a hate crime against him. and the noose was there since 2019. NASCAR released the photo.
Yeah, hello.
That shit looks like a noose. And I'm like, are we just going to like not investigate it? Or is it like, oh, it wasn't a hate crime. But the damn thing's been around since October, you know, so I still have questions to the FBI. But that's the problem, Maria, because then you see the backlash. And as these Black Lives Matter protests have been ongoing, now you're seeing the right. And perfect example, Representative Louis Gohmert in Texas. He accused the protesters of being Marxist-backed.
These kind of insurrections can start small and be legitimate, as were the peaceful protests over the death of George Floyd. But you have groups that are Marxist-backed that know, they know their history, despite the miseducation on history for so many Americans. They know how the Bolshevik Revolution happened and became successful. It was small.
Bolsheviks. Like, here we go. That's all they got, Maria. I mean, seriously.
I don't know. I think Julio, he misunderstood. Actually, they're Marxist-Leninist with a little bit of Trotskyist and some Bolshevism.
Throw everything
also,
in.
Also,
anarchy.
Just a little bit of Maoism, too. So,
yeah.
Get your Marxist.
And Maduro,
yeah.
And Chavez. Throw in Castro and Chavez, too, and everyone. Let's just throw them all
goodness.
In the mix.
Oh, my goodness. Listen, I was very concerned. As you know, I know nothing about NASCAR or any of this, but when I did start reading into this story,
yeah,
I was very confused because there's a noose, there's a backlash, there is a support for Bubba Wallace, which was beautiful from other NASCAR drivers. But then somewhere along the line, the FBI says, well, actually, it wasn't a hate crime. And you begin to just say, wait, this really feels like gaslighting.
Yeah. And this whole notion of like, well, NASCAR is being too oversensitive. And now because they got rid of the Confederate flag and the right was like, you see, everyone's a race hustler. Like, you know, Wajahat Ali, one of our ITT All-Stars. Called a race hustler because you had a backtrack. So I'm here going, why has the news been around? We're talking Talladega Super Speedway, which is in the South, right? And people are like, oh, there's a noose. So the FBI walking away and be like, oh, it's not a hate crime against Bubba Wallace. So I'm like, is it a hate crime against anybody else? Like, you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. And again, you have to trust your eyes. I also have been paying a little bit more attention to the Lincoln Project. It is a Republican super PAC, which they've been doing some really strong ads. And these are, you know, Steve Schmidt, who's used to run Sarah Palin's campaign, who, by the way, I like Steve. I met him at MSNBC, but also
complicated individual. I don't want to go down that road.
Complicated. But nonetheless, the ads from the Lincoln Project are pretty rocking, and they are getting under 45 skin to get back to this whole notion of juju. But again, I just want to continue to bring it back to people are doing shit. People are taking action in different forms. And this is what democracy looks like. My soapbox.
I know. All right. Get off the soapbox for a second because we're going to move on to our second topic. And it's actually going to be an immigration and COVID update. So last week, right, we talked about how the Supreme Court ruled that Trump couldn't end the DACA program. And that was a big win. I mean, it still raises questions. Latino USA, shout out. Great episode. Talks about the future of DACA. Gets voices of dreamers. Please listen to that. It dropped earlier this week. But then on Thursday, SCOTUS ruled in a 7-2 vote. It wasn't even close. That asylum seekers could be deported without being given a federal court hearing if they failed their initial asylum screening. So this ruling basically allows for expedited deportations. Maria, you emailed the team like,
no.
You know, on Thursday night, you're like, I need to talk about this. So what do you want to say about it?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about how excited we were about the Supreme Court on DACA and how that reprieve for all the young and not so young people anymore who, well, hell, everything is young. I mean, hello. It's my birthday next week, if I didn't say so already. And I'm still so young, multiple decades old.
You are, yes.
So the problem is that, you know, we were kind of celebrating for undocumented people, just like we can let them, you know, exhale. But then This week, the Supreme Court, terribly, it was 7-2. Sonia Sotomayor wrote an amazing dissent, but boy, she was clobbered 7-2. This is historic what they have done. And of course, I'm reporting on refugees all the time. They're on my phone. They're on my WhatsApp. I'm hearing from them. I'm talking to them every day, Julio.
Yeah.
People whose lives are at stake and they're trying to get to the United States. If they fail that first interview, once they are finally allowed, if they can get there,
yeah,
and they fail, it's over. It's done for them. And there should always be recourse in our legal system, right? You should always be able to appeal. Imagine if these were Jewish refugees escaping the Nazi era, and the Supreme Court said, if you fail on your first attempt and you don't convince us, don't even try. You're not. And I know that that might sound stark and you might be going, oh,
yeah,
but the United States did turn away Jewish refugees who were escaping from Hitler and the Nazis. Okay. We did an interview with Armando Lucas Correa, his beautiful and powerful book called The German Girl.
Yeah.
That talks about St. Louis, the ship that was turned away from multiple ports. So this country has turned away refugees. I just want you people to realize it's happening right now. That's what we're talking about. And this decision will not just impact this moment, but decades. So I'm devastada.
Yeah. And I think the important thing about it is what you said. It's like the way the questions are asked, everything is stacked against the person seeking asylum. You know, people need to step back for a second and say, oh, the Trump appointed justices. There are some Obama appointees that voted with the Trump appointees.
Thank you.
Just saying. And this is a bigger issue. But this is the other part about Trump's playbook, because it's a cycle. And I've actually written about this whole notion of like when things are bad, like let's just blame immigrants.
Yep.
There's another thing that happened on Monday. He signed an executive order temporarily banning work visas. Like, hello. So this basically bars thousands of people from working in this country. It's the same reasoning by Stephen Miller and other administration officials about protecting American jobs during a pandemic. More than, you know, 45 million people filed for unemployment since March. So let's blame the immigrants, right? Let's blame the foreign people.
So in terms of the coronavirus pandemic and the impact, Florida, Arizona, Texas, record spikes. I mean, my heart just, every time I see these numbers. Mm. And five states hit record highs in terms of hospitalizations. I feel like I'm back, you know, at the end of March here in New York City, listening to these terrible numbers, but this is not happening in New York. It's happening in these other places. We have Trump saying that the solution is to slow down testing, whatever the fuck that is.
What the fuck? What the fuck? Sorry.
Doesn't mean there's going to be fewer infections, dude. But we do know that two more members of his campaign team who were at the Tulsa rally on Saturday did test positive for the virus. And they're not wearing masks as far as we know, right? Yeah, that's bringing a total of eight people on his team who were involved in the rally who now have tested positive. I want to point out that we've got some issues with the New York Times. There's a lot of love-hate there, but they do some great reporting. Friday, they released a big piece about Latinos and their higher infection rates, because right now in the last 2 weeks, counties across the country where at least a quarter of the population is Latino has recorded an increase of 32% in new cases compared to only 15% in other counties. I don't know. Are we seeing like headlines about that all over the place?
No, it's funny.
Are we seeing that on the cable news? Are you being asked to be on cable news all the time talking about this? I'm just wondering.
Oh, no, I have not been asked. And we've actually reported so many, not only Latino USA, Latino Rebels here on In the Thick. We're reporting this. We actually just published this fantastic piece by the Puerto Rico Center for Investigative Journalism about how in all these counties that are spiking, there's a lot of Puerto Ricans. So it's there. The data is there. Let me just leave you with this as well, which is just mind-boggling. When I saw what the CDC said, that they're estimating that the number of people in the U.S. infected with COVID-19 could be as high as 23 million people, which is 10 times the current 2.3 million confirmed cases. I actually think the Northeast, and I know this sounds really like, here we go, here are the liberal elites coming in.
By the way, I can't stand liberal elites, but
I know,
okay.
But you know, I'm just, you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
But the Northeast, we are in part of the country right now where we're seeing a significant downturn, right? I think
it's amazing.
And people are actually practicing.
We did it.
It's so common. I mean, my son, like, he's like, I want to go to the beach. Wore a mask with people and they socially distance. I'm like, all right, that's cool. And there's a behavior up here. Talking to my family in Florida, talking to other people outside, and you know, in Arizona, I have friends in Arizona. People are like, What the hell? Like, do you not see what happened? And that's the part where I think, I don't know. I don't know how we get past this.
Well, I did see a meme this morning. Okay. But the meme was, if you don't want to be homeschooling your children in September, you better be wearing a mask right now. And I was like, well, that might get some people to wear their mask.
There you go.
That might do it. Okay. Our final topic is a 2020 update.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, New York and Kentucky had their Democratic primaries. My family voted by mail. It was so easy.
I saw that on the Insta.
Yeah, on the Insta. So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, remember when people had a real hard time saying her name? They were like, who is she? Well, she won again. She defeated, Michelle Caruso Cabrera, former CNBC anchor and correspondent. Let me tell you, my Latinas in Power group.
They're not feeling the love for Michelle.
They don't like Michelle Caruso Cabrera. So, this notion of Latinas, we're all one. No, necessarily. Please be clear.
Interesting.
This is what AOC had to say after her win.
When we won in 2018, we were called a fluke by politicians, by media, by so many people that are kind of tend to be part of this more powerful establishment. And so I saw sophisticated analysis that I won because of my last name. And frankly, that had an impact, I think, on my entire first term, where people were saying, all the time, are you sure you really want to go out and take a risk on taking these bold stances? You might get primary. Your first reelection is always the hardest. And every single time I had to recenter myself and ask myself, why am I here? And what am I here for? And I always knew that I ran, and I always knew that we are all here, that we are running here together as a movement to advance what is important and to stand up for the right thing, even if standing up for the right thing is the hard thing to do.
And it really is a testament to, like, organizing. Politics is about organizing.
In a pandemic, too.
In a pandemic. But, it's about understanding grassroots politics, which I think is a good reminder for all of us as we think about our democracy. In New York, also Jamal Bowman, a progressive African-American, challenged longtime Democratic Representative Elliot Engel in a landslide lead.
He's expected to win because the absentee ballots are still being counted, but the race hasn't been called.
Because Elliot Engel actually ousted your own grandfather.
Yes, he did.
It's complicated, but
yes, Mario Biaggi, I'm being out there. You called it up. He did.
Just look it up if you're interested.
Yeah, look at the Steve Kornacki tweet if you're interested. That's my grandpa. I love my grandpa.
In Kentucky, the race for a Senate Democratic primary to see who will go up against Mitch McConnell is still very close, with Charles Booker leading Amy McGrath. Of course, we also saw in Louisville, Kentucky, that voters... This was perhaps one of the most amazing things. We've seen a lot of amazing things over the last month.
Yeah.
But Louisville, Kentucky voters,
when
they were locked out of the only polling site in the county after 6 p.m., check this out. They were like, El Pueblo Unido jamás será vencido. You're letting us into this place to vote, which was incredible. Their protest was incredible.
Yeah, let's just step back for a second, because AOC, she also raised more money, right, than any other House Democrat. She took her reelection seriously, and there was this sort of like, she's not going to win again. She crushed it, people. Like, this whole thing about AOC needs to stop. She is a formidable force in the national political arena, in New York City politics. She's a queen and kingmaker. So if Bowman wins, and, even in the South Bronx, there's, supposedly Richie Torres, he's leading right now in that race that I know Latino USA, which I've all of a sudden shouting out a lot in this show because they're doing fantastic work. They're actually doing a podcast about the race in the South Bronx in early July. So check that one out when it comes out.
It's really, really good.
There's so many things that are happening. And AOC, I'm just saying it right now, she is a power broker. The right can just like accept it. She's going to be targeted. There's people talking about, that's our first Latina president. Watch out. That's what I'm getting from people.
Well, think about it. Let's say, in 10 years.
If she continues like this.
If she continues like this.
She crushed it.
I do want to kind of broaden it in that Latinos and Latinas, and we've been saying this for a while, are in many ways becoming more politically engaged in a way that is changing what it looks like. So it's AOC, who people thought was an aberration, not so much. Because, for example, like in terms of Richie Torres,
yeah,
he's Afro-Latino, Afro-Dominican from the South Bronx,
openly gay,
queer,
yep,
and has a street kind of base politician. So it's about how these are not flukes, and actually get ready for the ripple effects, because my students are inspired by Alexandria. They will say, you know what? I am going to try and run. Why not?
One of the biggest mistakes that the right is mischaracterizing about AOC is that it's only New York. It's only liberal New York. It's only like the district. That's the future of the country. You know, if you look at Queens, that district is what the country's going to be. And I agree with you 100%. If people miscalculate her all the time, I think you're seeing the start of a new power wave, and she's going to lead it. And it's going to be Latina led. I'm just saying.
I've been doing that for a while. I'm just saying, leading my little household here.
I know.
It's like, that's my mom, my abuelita.
What you have been covering, and people would be like, ay, Maria, it's happening. It's coming to fruition. Because you're right. It was a Latina that she ran, and everyone's like, oh, AOC, the socialist, crushed. It was like Muhammad Ali and Sonny Liston, and Sonny Liston is knocked out in 30 seconds. And you see that famous picture of Muhammad Ali, like looking over Sonny Liston and be like, you want more of this? That's AOC.
Oh my God, you just talked about boxing and I have no idea anything that you just said. I know Muhammad Ali is
a famous photo of Muhammad Ali.
I'm going to go look it up. I'm going to go look it up.
Look it up.
All right. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
Dear listener, remember, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. You know, you may think it's like something boring for you to do. For us, it makes a big difference.
Fun homework.
Really, 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 really does help us. And by the way, shout out to all you listeners, because our numbers are on the rise. We're just saying. So you, I don't know if you're telling everybody to listen. It looks that way.
Bestseller.
Remember, you can tell all your friends and family to listen to us on Pandora or Spotify, wherever they can listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In The Thick Show. And like us on Facebook. In The Thick is produced by Nicole Rothwell, Noor Saudi, and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite fellow, Harsha Nahata, with editorial support from Erica Dilde. Our audio engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our intern is Ariel Goodman. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Captain ZZK Records. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you on our next episode. Ciao.
Muhammad Ali. Now I'm singing it. See you guys.
There's a song?
Yes, there is. He floats like a butterfly,
sings like a bee. I know this song.
It's a great song. Bye, guys.
No, I want the address and the phone number and your Zoom.
No, because like...
No. Oh, I'm calling you every morning.
You know what? Do not disturb.
Every morning.
Wake up, Julio.
No.
Julio, you're not on vacation. Let's get...
Wait, hold on a second. Hold on a second. Contacts, Hinojosa. Delete. Oh!
Oh, my God.
You know I wouldn't do that, but that was hilarious.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.